Welcome to Midlife Bites. This is the podcast that tells the truth about how midlife bites, why it bites, and what happens after it bites. I'm Kirsten Bowes, clinical psychologist, midlife mentor, and someone who believes midlife isn't a crisis. Well, maybe it is a bit. At the very least, it's a reckoning. But it's also an invitation to your reclamation. Here you'll find real talk, real stories, and the kind of conversations that make you feel less alone and more like yourself. And heads up, I get a little bit sweary sometimes, so tune in if you do too, or at least don't get offended if you hear a few choice words. Sometimes it's just me, sometimes it's me chatting with a guest, but either way, it's always going to be raw, relatable, and real. Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone back to Midlife Bites. It's super cool that you are tuning in again, and I thank you for that. This is a new podcast that I really hope we're able to bring interesting stories, great information, helpful information, different perspectives maybe even to help you navigate the joys, the trials and tribulations of midlife, which is kind of why the podcast is called Midlife Bites, because I haven't yet met anyone who is in midlife or who has been in midlife and, you know, moved well beyond, who perhaps hasn't said to me, yeah, they can be some tough times during this period of life. Today I have Kaz Amos, and she's a psychologist over in New South Wales. I'm in Perth. So we always kind of like to think of over the East Coast. I'm impressed that I actually know kind of the state that she's in, because when you're in Perth, you either have up north, down south, over to Roto, over east, or overseas. That's the locations of the world. That's how we define.
I understand. I'm over east.
You
That's
are.
That's what I know. I'm over east.
Cool. So Kaz, you are a psychologist at the Hummingbird Centre, but I know you've got, you know, you cross a wide range of, I guess, challenges and client populations, and you've also got a fairly interesting background as well. So can you just kind of put us a bit more in the picture with your working life now and even your career kind of to date?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me for a start. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm glad that we're talking about this midlife thing, because I did not hear my mum talking about this very much. Mm-hmm. And in hindsight, I can see that it was a really extended period of her life. And I was unaware.
Yeah.
And I think I'm doing a really good job of making my kids aware of what their mother's going through. And maybe it's biting a little bit.
Them or you.
just to say that to bring attention to it.
Yeah.
To bring attention to what we're experiencing is just so really important. So thank you for, you know, building this platform so we can do this together and not have to suffer in silence or suffer alone and not let our families know, but tell our families, go listen to the podcast, you'll learn all about it. About me, I am a newly registered psychologist. I've been a psychologist for 1 year.
I did not know that. Awesome.
Yeah, so I did that crazy midlife thing of going back to uni and finished that 7-year journey just over 12 months ago. Boy, oh boy, was that a haul. Yeah. And, of course, smack dab in the middle of it are all the symptoms of what I didn't know was coming. So that was, you know, that was a merge of things at the same time. Prior to that, I'd been a counsellor in private practice for about 10 years. And, you know, woven into that, I also was really interested in fitness. So personal training was a part of another qualification. Husband and I had a business together. So, of course, I've got to go and do a business degree as well to, you know, amp it up. And in amongst that, building a family and who are now 3 adult kids who are, you know, doing really well and being good people in the world, which is quite nice at this end.
Yeah.
It's nice to look at them and see these grown up people and just go, wow.
Yeah.
That's all that.
Yeah.
So, it's lovely to be in midlife and have actually had lots of experiences to call on. I know when I was at uni, you'd talk to young people who are, you know, in their early 20s, and they're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe you've done this and you've done that. And I'm like, I've been around for like 30 more years than you, of course. I hadn't have done anything. What have I been doing?
Exactly.
It's a nice place to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the beauty of midlife for sure, is that we have lived a lot of life, and personally and professionally, we've collected a lot of experiences, both, you know, wonderful and, you know, neither here nor there, and perhaps also really difficult. And we bring all that to the table. And I mean, one of the reasons why I love working with midlife women and talking and listening to them, I mean, I am one myself, of course, but is just because of the richness of life. And, you know, naively, in my very, very early career, I'm actually a clin and forensic psych. So a lot of my career was in the kind of early career was in prison systems and things. And I remember the decision to move into that was twofold. One was nobody wanted to work in that space at that time. In the 90s, that was a really unappealing place to work. And I knew I was up against mature age students in terms of pracs and also the workforce. And I thought, well, I'll choose something unpopular because it will, you know, it'll help me have a chance. Whereas if I choose the popular stuff, I'm going up against mature age people, and they will be perhaps the preference, you know, and things. So that was one reason. But also, very naively, it's, you know, it's 2021. very naively, I thought normal everyday people just could not be interesting, like, you know, this particular forensic population. And yeah, the really cool thing is, yes, I worked in that area for a long time, but alongside it, I did my Gestalt psychotherapy training over 4 years, which is where I really learned how interesting people are, full stop. And so that's when I really kind of added into my working life, working with everyday, what I would call everyday kind of people, and learned that we're all complex. I don't care what our experiences are. There is a complexity to being human because there's a complexity to life. So, yeah, you know, this is one of my favorite things, is to be able to listen to midlife women, because I'm such a champion for women in general and midlife women, and be able to bring that complexity to other people, because there's so much to be gained in sharing stories. You learn so much from hearing other people's stories, and it feels really good to give your story out into the world, I think. You know, if you're inclined to do so, it's usually because it will feel good. It feels like a lovely, lovely thing to share. So
yeah.
I'm just fascinated by your career, and knowing how full-on psychology degrees are and that you did it at the age that you did, hats off to you, because it requires a persistence that I'm not sure I would have been capable of in my midlife years, particularly in the tricky times of perimenopause. I don't think I would have had the, I actually, I don't, it's not that I don't think, I know I wouldn't have had the capacity.
You know how sometimes you don't see something coming?
Yeah.
Like you don't, it's like you don't know what you don't know until you find out, and then you know it. I think the same, that I would apply that to uni, and I would also apply that to perimenopause.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't show up and say, oh, hello, I'm here. This is the time. It was very sneaky and kind of ominous.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, it was a little like it snuck up on me and I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
I didn't feel old enough. I didn't feel like I even knew what was happening. Like, if this is, because I really didn't even know about perimenopause as such, because I'm 53. So even what's come out in the most recent years, I'm almost past needing that information. So it's quite interesting to not know what you didn't know at the time.
Yeah. And, you know, I think of the generations that are coming up, you know, even millennials are more informed as they start to move into those perimenopausal years. You know, they're way more informed than we were.
So when it comes to menopause or perimenopause and uni life, you don't know what you don't know. So I didn't know that university was going to be so hard, but I didn't know that perimenopause was like what it was. And I don't even know if anybody could have told me and I would have gone, oh, yeah, yeah, I'll be right, I'll get through. I don't even know. I think it's a hindsight thing that I look back at and I go, oh, those symptoms were part of perimenopause. And you just are going along with it. I was just going along with it.
Yeah, wow.
I feel like my first signs, I remember going to a Christmas party and it was a hot day, but I was sweating profusely. And of course I had like a little sundress on and everyone hugging Christmas and I'm like, don't touch me. Merry Christmas, don't touch me. I'm too hot, I'm sweating and I don't understand why.
Yes.
And I think that was the first sign of like something's not right.
Yeah, something's going on here. And it's funny you say that because I think, you know, with that kind of stuff like hot flushes, some of the early ideas I had about how they would be, because I didn't have them initially, was not how they then emerged for me. You know, I had this image that it would be like, I don't know, walking straight into a fire. Like I just thought it would be really immediately, you know, terribly, terribly hot. And I know it is for some women, that's how they describe it. But for me, I'm the frog in the water that's slowly heating up. That's my experience of it, which means it's happening for a while before I actually notice. And then it does reach this critical point where I'm like, oh my God, there's actually no air around me at all. And I experienced that, you know, for ages. And then, but people would say to me, you know, do you get hot flushes? And I'd say, no, not at all.
Really? Wow.
Because I just didn't have that picture of, you know, I had a very narrow view of what that experience would look like and feel like. And that wasn't my experience. And I think, you know, that statement captures so much about perimenopause, doesn't it? It's like, I didn't know the breadth, you know, women don't know the breadth of what a perimenopause experience can be like and what it can include. And I think the more that we can, you know, educate and get that information out there, including the random kind of symptoms, the weirdest symptom, and I mentioned it on, I think I mentioned on Instagram the other day, which was funny to get the responses, but I get this internal, and other women were saying they do too, this kind of tremoring all through my limbs.
Wow.
Not quite restless legs because I have them, I know what they feel like, but it's as irritating as that because there's nothing you can do. Like it's just this vibration kind of feeling, and it can go on for a long time and it's just annoying.
Wow.
Don't Google that though because
you
go to dark places.
So is this where we share our weirdest symptom?
Yeah, go for it.
Mine is the burning mouth.
Oh, do you have that?
Yes.
Sounds awful.
It is awful. And I backtrack in my mind. I go, did I have a hot cuppa and burn my mouth? And I didn't know that I burnt my mouth, but gee, my mouth feels like it's burning inside. And it was the Google search that I found. Oh, this is one of those.
Yeah.
It's so, so strange. And how can a sensation of being burnt come from not being burnt?
Yes, no, neither do I. And my hunch is the hypothalamus is involved when it's about heat and things like that.
Yes.
And yes, we know that hormones are relevant to our entire system, which is why we can get these really kind of weird experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the fine mechanism for some things are just like, really, really, how does that happen? But yeah, so we need to get that kind of random information out because that symptom in particular, and you know, with my tremoring and stuff, they are unusual. Whereas some of the other symptoms of perimenopause can, like, you know, a lot of women come to start working with me, and you know, they, by the time they see me, they often know they're perimenopause, but for a long time they just thought they were burnt out because the majority of their symptoms were around that extreme fatigue and the brain fog and the mood changes, all of which are common in burnout, absolutely. And the two things don't have to be mutually exclusive.
No.
But early in the piece of those experience, they would ex have those different kind of symptoms and attribute them to burnout. And
Yes, I
so,
have seen that clinically as well.
oh, I'm sure you have. And I think this is where it's important to kind of help people under help women understand, in particular women, that there's a bunch of symptoms that can fit into other diagnoses, and those diagnoses, can still be relevant and accurate and all the rest. But there's this additional, I don't even want to call it a diagnosis because it's not a disease, but there's this additional life experience that can also explain those symptoms. Don't know what, and therefore burning, burning mouth and tremors. Yeah, they're the weird ones that you can Google, and there you go, you get the
Yeah.
answer that.
Yeah, that you just didn't know what you
That you
didn't
just didn't
know.
know. Yeah. But
Yeah.
I'm really curious to hear, Midlife Bites is all about how midlife can bite and how women navigate those experiences. And of course, it can bite us in so many different ways. And certainly the menopausal transition is one of those. I know that for myself very, very well. But I'm really curious, as to what comes to mind for you and what your midlife bite experience is. And it might be perimenopause, but yeah, I'm interested to hear more about that for you.
The biting, I think it's, I'd almost say it's really in that there's the physical, there's the emotional, there's the what's happening in life, and woven through it are those, yes, those symptoms and how differently they show up in each of those areas. I also think that one of the bites is when you become the Karen that you didn't expect you were going to be. And I feel that Karen was born out of perimenopause. She's had a gutful, she's exhausted, she's sick of being the bottom of the list. She wants to make herself a priority, and the only thing that she's got left to do it is her anger and rage. She does not have any regulation in her nervous system left. That lady's fried and she's demanding the manager. And I think that that's the bitey part of it. Like that some of those symptoms leave us feeling like we're not ourselves.
Absolutely. I hear that all the time. I'm
Because
sure
we're
you
it's a transition and everything's transitioning at the same time. My role at home is transitioning, my relationship is transitioning. I was academically transitioning and career-wise transitioning. The business that my husband and I had built over 20 years, we sold that in the middle of all of this. And so that was a huge transition. For him and myself at the same time. So we had all these really kind of big things all happening, and to not feel like myself was quite unnerving.
Well, you feel at sea, right? You
Yeah.
know, when you feel like yourself, it's anchored. You know, there can be crazy stuff going on, but at least you've got that sense of who you are, to anchor you. Even if that version is also experiencing a lot of stress and distress and things, but when you're not feeling like yourself, then you have lost your anchor. And I think that is one of the most challenging things in this whole experience is, regardless of what all the symptoms may well be, and there's a multitude of them, and they evolve, what you experience in the beginning changes over time and all that
Yes,
kind of stuff.
yes.
But it is that, discombobulation. I've never used that word so much in my life
Yeah, it's a great word.
until now, because it really just describes what I experienced and what so many other women experience. And when they kind of tell me and say things, and you would know this too, personally and professionally, is, when you're getting told the equivalent of the rug's being pulled out from under me, that often is, when you boil it down and when you drill it down, it is that sense of what's been, I've lost me. I've lost me in this process.
Yes.
And that is truly scary. It's also an opportunity, but it can take a while to get to the point where you start seeing it as an opportunity and being
Yeah.
able to see it as an opportunity.
Yeah, you just made me think about it from a nervous system perspective. You know, like that huge level of dysregulation and how foreign our own mind, body, thoughts, feelings, how foreign that can feel, and how unnerving and how distressing. And then, yeah, where do we find ourselves in all of that? Because, like, logistically, the people that you were caring for are growing up and they don't require that of you anymore. So that role that was very defined for 20 plus years is no longer, that's not your function for these people anymore. So that's like adds to that sense of, well, who am I? One of the reasons I went back to uni was because I had seen a number of women coming into my practice as a counsellor who were at this, and I'm just going to go on averages here, of married 22 years, hate everybody, feel irrelevant, no one cares anyway, and so I'm out. I'm going to eat, pray, might, love. I'm going to have an affair. I'm going to find something else. I'm going to move away. I'm going to ditch everybody because I don't feel like I have any other answers.
Yes, definitely.
And I'm missing who I am.
Yeah. Because
I got lost.
And I'm
relationship. I got lost in the family. I got lost in everything but me.
And I think the added thing is not feeling as though it will be possible to find me in the current circumstances, you know, in the setup that that they've got. I mean, I definitely see that all the time. And, you know, sometimes the flavour is exactly, you know, as you just described. Other times I see that, but it's also, you know, I'm fed up with everyone else. They don't see me either. I'm invisible. I'm just the person who does everything, organizes everything, plans everything, you know, make sure everything and everyone is okay. And I can't do it anymore. And nobody's offering to help. And I might have asked a few times, you know, for very reasonable contribution, but I get pushback or ignored or promises that aren't fulfilled, blah, 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 blah. I'm done. Yeah. And many long-term relationships actually, you know, end in that, in the context of that. For sure, I think, you know, the data does tell us that, you know, the relationships that are ending in midlife are typically initiated by the women. They're just jack of it.
That's why we went to therapy.
Yeah, good.
5 years ago, that was because, again, it was also part of the things that were happening is, that, you know, the old stories that had continued through about 20 years could no longer be squashed or ignored or put aside or go and do another task, because there was always another task, but it was not another task. This thing had to be, you know, this relationship needed nurturing and it needed new tools because it's going into a new chapter. And that's exactly how we framed it for ourselves. We're like, we're at a point where our tools don't work anymore. So we need to find some new tools. What do we need? We walked away with some tools, which in part, I guess you would see this too professionally, when women are coming to professionals to ask for support, they're looking for new tools to do this next chapter. Because the old ones are no longer functional. Or irrelevant, because the same people aren't there in the same way.
Yeah, I think Esther Perel is well known to say, you know, I've had multiple marriages over my lifetime. They just happen to be with the same person.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that we're supposed to evolve as humans. That's the bottom line. Growth is something that is supposed to happen. But sometimes, you know, there's a stagnation, and maybe one person is more stagnant than the other or whatever. But
we take turns in that too, because understanding that our partner is often going through some sort of transition. If we are, it's likely they are too.
Yeah. I think as well, tools is a really good kind of way to frame like what's required for the individual, but also, you know, the kind of the couple moving forward. I spent a lot of time, I guess, talking about the old rules, you know, the messaging, the conditioning I talk about the Kool-Aid. Everyone's drunk the Kool-Aid. And the Kool-Aid is typically that, you know, women and mothers are going to be doing the vast majority of the invisible load. And, you know, we've drunk it as the people that do it, and other people have drunk it in terms of expecting us that of us, sometimes consciously, most often not consciously. And I think, you know, they're the things that really come to my therapy room very, very often are the, I don't want to be the only one who's actually managing this, this, and this, and all the rest. And that capacity to do so, I think, because it reduces, typically reduces in perimenopause. And, you know, our hormones are doing their thing, one of which is our, you know, our estrogen's declining. And that's known to be a hormone to motivate us towards serving and accommodating others and, you know, connecting, and us having a focus on connection with others and things, doing for others. When that's declining, you know, and our stress is going up, our cortisol is going up just as well by virtue of everything, internal and external, we just lose the capacity. We can't spin as many plates as we used to. And it seems to be within that semi, and I use the word crisis both intentionally, but not from a midlife crisis, you know, cliche perspective, but there's this crisis in capacity that occurs. And it's that that forces, you know, us to look at what's going on and what needs to be different. And often it forces the people around us and closest to us to be part of that conversation as well, and be part of those changes. It's really lovely to hear that you and your husband went to therapy, and it was obviously a really useful thing, because I know, and I do know of, shall we say, success stories where people have navigated, couples have navigated this, and we'll do, say the things that you've said, like we needed to find a new way to relate to one another, and this, we are now different people, and so we need to kind of be clear about the couple as an entity is now a new version. You know, it's not the old version of us, it's a new version of us.
Different Kool-Aid.
Yeah, different Kool-Aid,
Different Kool-Aid.
definitely different Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I think that's something that we did pick up in those sessions, is that one of the principles that we've both learned at the same time, just through stuff that, you know, people that we both read and where we're interested, is all the rules are my rules. So something that occurred to me was that I was living for a while thinking all the rules are his rules, and this is the Kool-Aid. And I had like an awakening, which was like, oh, all the rules are my rules. Oh, okay. Well, if they're my rules, what do I want? Well, how do I want to play? Like, what kind of life do I want? What kind of relationships do I want? How do I want them to feel? Especially at this time where I'm really vulnerable and I'm really exhausted and I'm really, maybe I'm not communicating my best, but I don't know any other way. So I, you know, struggling and learning how to communicate and still feel and notice myself in amongst all of that fogginess and confusion and newness and not understanding. Yeah, it's good to find, I suppose, a support person, support people, gathering knowledge like this to be able to, oh, this is normal. Okay, I'm not alone. And then if I don't feel alone, then I also can support, you know, other people going through it, or be with my partner and find a way to communicate what's actually happening for me.
And I think
Yeah, it's
that's
tough.
one of the things that the modern world has, you know, eroded, which I do see coming back, and that is the sharing of stories. You know, we used to have the older women to kind of look to, other women going through things at the same time, and older women to look to kind of have an idea of what the path could be out of this muddy, difficult time. And, you know, then we kind of moved into our own very individual spaces. And I mean, I continue, despite 30 years of being a psych, I continue to be struck by how many women may well have friends, female friends, that they describe being close to, but who they would never have these conversations with still.
Wow.
And I really discovered
Yeah.
that when I worked in the perinatal space as well, in the sense that I would often say, do you have support? Do you have girlfriends? Yeah. Do they know how rough things might, are for you? Because if they're seeing me, the things are rough, right? Okay, so you can call them in the middle of having a meltdown. Oh, no. And so that degree of vulnerability I think has been really lost. And I
Yeah.
think part of the reason is that we can curate the time that we spend with people. I remember as a kid, growing up where I did, just the way the world worked then was women were, my neighbors were in and out of our houses, right?
Yeah,
My
big
mum
yeah.
was losing her shit.
And if my mum was losing her shit, she was probably going over the back fence to
Yeah.
see Auntie Carol, because Auntie Carol had much more shit to deal with than my mum.
That's what I mean. Like
Yeah.
it was harder to hide because there
Yes.
was this more community-oriented way of life. And so, there's every chance that across the course of my childhood, the neighbors might have walked into the house because that's how it was back then, and seen the house a mess, and seen my mum a mess, and seen, that there's a bit of tension going on or whatever. And I would have seen that as a kid going into other people's houses, and it wasn't anything abusive, let me tell you, like wasn't awful, it was just real life.
I was just going to say, you're like making the messy normal, you know, because it is a bit of a messy time, and growing families is messy as well. Any transition, you know, even the transition of birth, like this is messy thing. But you're right about the curated version of life, and you know, lots of people say, oh, I don't like the drop in, don't pop in on me. And yet to have had visitors over the weekend who all invited themselves to our house, by the way. They all invited themselves. I was like, wow, we're the house where people want to invite themselves. Cool.
This is
That's
great.
nice. Yeah, because that's community
That is community.
within our family, I guess, and people that we care about.
Yeah.
Nice to
But it
own.
also shows that comfort and steadiness that you have in having people kind of come into your home. Some people, even with preparation, aren't comfortable with that.
No.
And because, the preparation, because it either requires the preparation and they're too tired, or, the preparation won't meet a certain standard. And I think that's the other thing as well. So, but I do think we're moving towards maybe not the, just popping around and walking into each other's houses, although, I'm all for that if you know them really well. Like I'm not suggesting you walk into a stranger's house.
That's where my mind went.
People can come to my house if they know me,
Because you need to put a caveat around this.
I do. I
This is a
do. Yes, please don't just drop into
public
a stranger,
service
somebody's house you don't
announcement.
know, or even somebody's house you don't know well enough to do that. But what I think is happening is I see Gen X women as quite a courageous, I mean, every generation of women have done amazing things for the cause of women. There's been every generation has created progress and change. And I feel Gen X is around this kind of health and perimenopause and menopause and really kind of, all the medical misogyny, the absence of health research on us, because we're all too difficult because of our hormones and stuff. All the shaking of trees we're doing there and speaking up, I think is our contribution as this generation. And because we're prepared to be outspoken, I think we don't have the same kind of expectations of keep biting our tongue and don't tell people certain things. I think we're more prepared to speak up and to share the mess. Maybe some are still struggling with having people see the mess in the height of its mess,
Oh, yeah.
but we're definitely talking about it.
Do you know something interesting that's happened in my life over the last, I'd have to say, 2 years, is I met a group of women who, so I religiously go to this yoga class, 6 or 7 on a Thursday. The yoga place has got a cafe attached to it, and I arranged for a friend of mine to meet us. We would meet there and have coffee at 7 a.m. And then another two women who we kind of knew, but we didn't knew because know very well, but we would walk past them on our walk. They started sitting with us. And then another couple of women started sitting with us. And I came out of yoga one day and all the women, there's about six of us, maybe eight altogether. And I came out of yoga and the chatter, the you know, like the clucking, beautiful clucking of hens. And I walked out and I said, well, this is the loveliest group of women I have ever seen. And I'll call you the love club and we will all be loving together. So we now have a like our little group that gets together.
The love club.
We are the love club. I'm the baby of the group.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Awesome. That's
I'm
awesome.
The youngest. I know. And like the oldest woman is probably 10 years older than me. And I have this gift that I meet with where like, so last week and everyone wasn't there at the same time, but someone arrived early. There were tears, there were cuddles, off she goes to work. Another woman arrived later, also in tears for a whole nother reason, and she goes off. And like I was fortunate enough to have this couple of hours that I could just, I just felt so grateful to be able to be there for them because they've been able to be there for me in so many ways when I've just, you know, it's such a, like an hour of time together, but it's so rich to have this wonderful resource of diverse women who I can say, you've been through this before. What was it like when your adult child, blah, 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 and they're like, girl, hang on there, you know.
Let me tell you.
And it's never, it always feels supportive. And it's not professional, but it satisfies something in me as a woman having this wonderful group of women who are not, I'm not related to them. I don't owe them anything. But I dearly value their wisdom.
Oh, absolutely. And I think
precious time, you know, it's time well spent, whether it's 15 minutes or 50 minutes. We to have, and I guess, you know, look for these women in your life if you're wondering, oh, how do I get through this by myself? Like talk, ask. Is this something that you went through? Was your mouth burning? You know, your limbs trembling. You know, because you only find out by having these conversations.
Yeah. I caught a snippet of another podcast, very different topic, but the snippet that I caught was something along the lines of, we're missing out on opportunities for connection because when we're sitting at the bus stop, when we're sitting at the cafe, you know, we're looking at our phones. When we're walking, we often, some might still be looking at their phones, but if not, there's still not that kind of eye contact greeting, da da da. And so
headphones
there's a lot
in,
of head, exactly, off. Headphones at the gym and all that kind of stuff. So we're really missing these opportunities for connection. And that's, you know, that's kind of how relationships were initially kind of formed. Maybe not in the back in the day, they might have been a bit more constructed and I'm going to introduce you to so and so or whatever. But I think there was, has been this chunk of time where, you know, we weren't kind of creating a don't communicate with me, you know, kind of vibe. There was far more of an openness. And so you would sit and maybe have a conversation with someone while you're waiting at the bus stop, or certainly more chatter at the hairdresser and stuff like that. It still happens a bit, but probably not as much as it used to. And these are the moments where some of the funniest but most also helpful and profound kind of conversation or information gets shared is, the burning
it
mouth.
It's gold. It's pure gold some days. Swear, like the stories and I guess too, things that other people's children have done, other partners have done, like all those.
It's
just a real bonding. And I always shout out to those women. I shout out to my lovies because I wish everybody had a set of lovies in their life to, you know, just have a moment with.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if we're kind of thinking about how challenging midlife can be, how it can bite, you know, it seems so simple to have lovies in your life. I love how you called that. You know, it's almost so simple that how can it be helpful, but it actually is profoundly supporting and nurturing on so many levels. And they're the kinds of things that also help us get through these midlife bite kind of moments or phases or stages and experiences is really having meaningful relationships with other women who are walking the path or have walked the path. I know that I also feel really, I really enjoy when I speak to women maybe 10, 15 years younger than me, who, you know, I can share this information with, and it floats my boat, because that way they're informed. You know, they won't come into this stage like I did, which is not knowing what was going on and then kind of
Absolutely.
slowly working it out. and they enjoy the conversation too. So yeah, this is the power of women sharing with one another. And I think, well, you know, we're actually very naturally good at it typically. Even the introverts of the world, the shy people of the world, have a place in a group with chatty women. They may not be the biggest contributor to the conversation, but their presence is always felt and always, you know, valued as well. So for me, you know, in kind of, we could talk forever, clearly, in hearing all the things that you've kind of navigated in life, and then particularly all the changes in midlife that you experienced, maybe not knowing you were perimenopausal at the time, but you were.
And ADHD.
I kind of figured that. that was a
and
bit of a
that one I did not see coming as
no.
well. But then, you know, now I can't unsee it. And that's also a wonderful understanding of myself and how my brain functions.
Yeah.
Which, again, another psychological jigsaw piece.
Absolutely.
Which is in the puzzle of me. And I don't think, again, like, I would have had the understanding as a younger person to, I don't know, maybe be curious about that for myself, as I am right now. So
Well, I think I've got a friend who's gone back to do her DPsych, and her thesis is around the double whammy of identity questioning that perimenopause brings and then late diagnosis ADHD brings. And you know, I mean, that was my experience too. And it is, I mean, I think either on their own bring that sense of, oh God, who am I now? What does this mean? And all the rest. Both of absolutely do that. We're questioning everything in both those experiences when they're occurring at the same time. Because a late diagnosis, you could be 30 and getting a diagnosis of ADHD. That is still late. It's considered late, but you're maybe not going through perimenopause at the same time, right?
No, that's right. Oh, but, talk about symptom exacerbation and.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the other thing that's happening with the knowledge around ADHD now is I am hearing of women where their late diagnosis of ADHD is occurring in the context of becoming mothers. And as someone who worked for a long time in the perinatal space as well, you know, that's a very much a profound shift within us when we become mothers. And so to add the late diagnosis of ADHD is equally profound. And isn't it interesting that these things are happening at significantly, like, big hormonal changes?
Absolutely.
Kind of kick-starting this.
No coincidence.
Yeah, no, no.
Yet to be fully understood, though.
Yeah. We might have to have another conversation.
another time. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, this has been very good. Thank you.
I'd love to hear more. Thank you so much. You know, the relationship stuff in particular is really lovely to hear, because sometimes I'm a bit personally inundated by things that don't work so well, and it's really lovely to hear that you found your way together to go and get some support, and that it's really helpful for you, and that positive reframe around, you know, why were we doing this? You know, why are we actually heading off to therapy? You know, the approach that you both had to, or the reasons why, you know, so lovely. So for me personally, that was really, really lovely to hear. But yeah, I mean, again, I want to say hats off to you for getting through university, selling a business, raising children, adult children, you know, young adult children, they might have been at that stage, all of
Yeah.
that, like, yeah, hats
It
off.
makes for a good, fun, juicy life, and I don't think I'd be
Yeah,
anywhere else, really.
no, yeah, I mean, now that you've kind of outed yourself as an ADHDer to me, I'm pretty sure that you couldn't, you won't have an uninteresting life. You wouldn't have and you couldn't have it. It's not going to be possible. I know
Yeah,
you.
forever.
I know that. I know that.
You. I know you.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Well, thank you so much again. I really appreciate it. I am absolutely convinced that listeners will get so much of out of hearing this conversation and the things that you shared. So thank you, and I will get you back again sometime. So
Yeah,
thank you.
thank you. Well, I'll look forward to it. And when I kick mine off, you'll be on my list of
Yes,
invitees
please,
because I would love
please.
that. I'd love
I love clearly chatting, and
it.
I really enjoy being a guest as well. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you,
Have a
Kirsten.
fab afternoon. You've been listening to Midlife Bites. If you liked what you heard, hit follow so you don't miss an episode. And if you have a minute, please leave a review. It really helps other women find the show. If you want to share your experience of the midlife bite, or you're an expert who can speak to the delights of it, please email me at kirsten@allaboutHerCentre.com.au and I'll be in touch. You can also head to our website, allaboutHerCentre.com.au, to find a practitioner who can support you through midlife. Or if you're a therapist, check out what's included in our health professional membership. We'd love to have you on board. Either way, remember, midlife isn't here to break you, it's here to remake you.